Hey,
welcome to
Urban Planning is Not Boring. I'm Sam.
And I'm Nat.
Alrighty.
And we're back. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
Welcome back to Zoom podcasting.
Yes, because we live too far away. Even though it's not that far away. It's pouring rain right now.
Yeah, pretty far and pouring rain. So yeah. We're in the comfort of our own homes and back.
I'm laying on the floor. I don't have a space that I can do this when Sean is also home.
Well, I think we need to kick Sean out when we're podcasting.
We'll just send him.
It's like, Sean, it's time to go.
Sit in your car.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So today, Sam and I are going to be doing a Q&A. We had some of you guys reach out on Instagram after we had posted just a little caption box that asked you guys to ask any questions that you might have had for Sam and I. And so we're going to go through all of those, give you some answers to the best of our ability. But before we jump in, Sam and I have started our first week back of our last semester of grad school, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So Sam, can you just share, by the way, just to mention, Sam and I are taking the same exact classes this semester.
Yeah.
So Sam and I are just basically sharing the same feelings, but first I'll let Sam kind of go into it. And how are you feeling? What's going on? What are your takeaways?
Takeaways. I'm feeling very overwhelmed already. I feel like, we have two professors who are new to teaching, especially new. I don't know if they've taught ever before. I know that this is their first time teaching at USC.
Correct. Yeah.
These classes.
Yeah.
And I think that they're doing great for what they were given.
Yes.
I think that the faculty sometimes throws adjuncts into positions that they are not prepared for.
Yeah.
And I think it just shows in like how the class is organized and run. Yeah. And it's kind of frustrating, more because I'm paying a lot of money for this. And then the professors don't really have a lot of context of like what knowledge we're coming into these classes with.
Yeah.
And what we don't know.
Yeah.
Like we're in a capstone. Just like our final project.
Yeah, basically the qualification to graduate, essentially.
Right. Yeah. And we are split into our concentrations in terms of like what we need to do for our individual part of the project. And okay, I'm going to say that I think that the separation of what each concentration has to do is very uneven.
Yeah. Yes.
Like we have the design students have to literally make a plan for like 100-acre parcel and like all these different diagrams. The housing and real estate, what Natalie does, has to do a whole ass. I don't think I'm supposed to swear. A whole pro forma. My face. The transportation and mobility people have to do a whole circulation plan. And I just have to talk about the environmental impacts.
Okay, first of all, you don't just have to talk about the environmental impacts. It's actually a really like tedious process.
It is. It's just like you can research it and find it. Like if I just look at the CEQA Appendix G, which lists all of the categories of environmental impacts, and then look at their feasibility report, they've probably already talked about most of them.
Yeah.
All the other concentrations, it really comes down to like you have to propose something and you have to back it up and make all of these assumptions. And mine, I feel like, is more straightforward because it exists.
Yeah.
The environmental impacts are there.
Yeah.
And if I'm proposing a park, there's not as many parameters as if you're proposing housing, which like you would have to do your pro forma.
Right.
So I just feel like that was frustrating. And yeah. I'm on the easy side of it.
I know what you're saying. And like on the housing and real estate development side, or just in general, I was really a bit concerned when we were provided like these instructions where it was like, here are like X amount of questions that you are obligated to answer in your report. Yeah. And then other than that, they're just like, okay, well, the rest is subjective. Like, what do you think needs to go into your proposal? And it's like,
yeah. And it's only 15 pages.
Yeah. And so for me, on the housing and real estate development side, obviously, if I'm going to propose housing, I still need to be aware of the environmental impacts. I still do need to be aware of, you know, economic development and things that are happening in the surrounding area and the surrounding context around the project. So like a part of me feels like I'm also pulling in other concentrations and I don't know how to like
silo
basically
it.
narrow that information down. Yeah, and yeah. So that kind of concerned me a bit. But at the same time, I have done 2 development proposals previously. One of them, thank God, I did all by myself for a final project for one of my classes that I've told everybody on this podcast was my favorite class ever. And now it's going to really come in clutch, you know, for this assignment. But fortunately, I think because I did that proposal alone and it was a housing development proposal, I kind of already have an outline of what I think should be included.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a little bit concerning because when you're not even given at least some sort of an outline, you are really basically starting from scratch. And that's just like a little bit jolting. Like just feel I'm more nervous than anything. I wouldn't say I'm overwhelmed necessarily. I think I'm just nervous because I don't necessarily know what to anticipate yet with this project. And February 28th is going to come really fast. Like I just know it.
It's like basically a little bit more than a month.
Exactly. So I feel like this is something that I already need to be on top of. And then we also have 2 other classes that we're taking. And I was looking at the syllabus and there are like a lot of assignments in these classes, like small assignments, but still like tedious work. So I'm just a little bit flustered because I feel like, okay, this is going to be a lot to balance, but I know I can do it. I know I'm capable. And so I just going to get through it. Mm-hmm. But I definitely can say my first week back to classes, I thought, like, I remember when I was talking to our academic advisor before she left, she had said, she was like, oh, your last semester, that's supposed to be like, you know, a breeze. And I can genuinely say that the last 3 semesters are going to be nothing compared to this one. I already know that.
What?
Because I don't think this is going to be a lot of work. No, I think it's going to be a lot of work, in my opinion.
I think that our design class is going to be a lot of work because we know nothing about urban design.
Yeah.
I think
the
microeconomics class, we were looking at supply and demand curves. And I was thinking, why am I here? Why is this required?
Well, I do think, I mean, it's definitely going to be valuable. And I'm really grateful that it's Dr. Bournette teaching the class because he is honestly one of the best professors, in my opinion. And I feel like the way he explains things, he provides a lot of clarity on things that are a little bit more challenging. And I feel like it's something, you know, that we're going to be going over a lot throughout the course of the semester. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. And then, I don't know, I do better with more technical things. And I like when things are very much so like, this is exactly what's expected of you versus we're going to just give you this very vague assignment and hopefully like you'll figure it out. And it's like, okay, thank you. But I don't know how I feel about that, but it's okay. It's definitely like a challenge. And so I'm just going to embrace it because like we said last week, 2023 is our year.
Yeah.
And so we're making the most of it.
And like the whole cohort is in this thing together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So. And I feel one section gets more clarity than they'll relay that.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly. I also do feel I felt a sense of comfort knowing that like everybody else was feeling, you know, very, very similar to how you and I were feeling.
Right.
And so that just kind of made me feel like, okay, you know what, maybe, you know, these concerns are going to maybe cause some changes to happen, or maybe we'll need like further assistance. And so I think that, you know, and the best part actually, in my, like, although yes, it's very unfortunate that I don't think our adjunct professors were prepared very well for these courses. They're very, very flexible and they seem to be very accommodating.
Yeah.
So they kind of like got, you know, they were able to like test the temperatures in class this week. And I think they both understood like, okay, you know what? I think we're going to need to like slow things down a little bit. So I do feel like it's, it will get better. And I do think they'll be flexible if it's needed. So we'll see.
So definitely a hectic first week back, but we're almost done. So close.
15 weeks, 15 each time we record, it's going to be like 14 weeks.
I know. Seriously. All right. Let's jump into these questions. The first one, what jobs can I get with a master's in urban planning? And thank you to everyone who submitted questions.
Yes. Thank you so much.
It's so nice to know that people actually care and are listening.
Yeah.
Or at least see our social media.
Mm-hmm.
But what jobs can I get with a master's in urban planning? I feel like this question is like, there are so many.
Yeah.
Truly.
I mean, even if you just think about the fact that our program, for instance, is split into X amount of different concentrations, you know, environment and sustainability, housing and housing and real estate development, transportation, XYZ. There are so many different concentrations, which means they're equally, you know, a distribution of different jobs. So there are just so many different options. And it's also like, if you want to be in the public sector or the private sector, or if you want to go into like business for yourself, that's also a possibility. So I do think that you can get involved in so many different spaces with urban planning, and it's so vast. And Sam and I would definitely recommend you going back and listening if you haven't already done so. We did an episode with Christy Kilborn. I hope I'm pronouncing her last name right.
I think that's right.
Okay, great. And she just provided us with a bunch of different information regarding careers in urban planning. So you could take a listen to that episode, and you can also follow her on social media, and we'll add her social media into the description box. Because she posts a lot about, you know, just careers, and she does career coaching herself. So I think that would be definitely a good resource to utilize. And Sam, I don't know if you have any other advice for someone who is looking to get into, you know, a job.
Yeah, I feel like the great thing about like planning is that you learn a lot of skills. Like obviously you take a lot away about planning once you get your master's, but in terms of like transferable skills, like there are so many that you could use in like a lot of different types of opportunities. So like if you didn't want to be like transportation planner or like housing planner, you could go into like grant writing, because you would know, like, especially if you wanted to work in like a housing or active transportation or like some space like that, or you could go into like private consulting in terms of like zoning regulations and like government compliance. And like, there's just so many outlets that connect with planning more broadly. Like you could be a sustainability analyst and look at that, or you could do green building. And like, I'm just thinking off the top of my head of environmental professions, because that's kind of my, I guess, niche, I'd say. But like outside of environmental, like there's still so many planning adjacent careers.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That you could go into, like if you wanted to be like a legislative aide or something, like you could go into like policy from a planning background, because you have that kind of background. I feel like the two are relatively linked in some aspects. And you could always get a dual degree in planning and policy or public administration or another related field. So I feel like it's just, there is so many opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just so infatuated with how intersectional urban planning is, because you don't just have to work in one niche market. They are very interconnected. So if you are interested in, for instance, in transportation and housing, there's something known as transit-oriented development. And so that's basically building housing near transit. And there are tons of jobs in that space. And so I think it's just really cool, the different opportunities that you can find with an urban planning degree. And then I also think that I appreciate that USC gives not only a general understanding, or actually I wouldn't say general, it's quite specific, but I mean general in the sense that we have to take required courses in all different kinds of concentrations. Mm-hmm. And then you also have like electives that you can take in different concentrations. And then you have your concentration courses in which you essentially specialize. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just as amazing, because if somebody were to say, enter into urban planning and they're getting their degree and they say it's like transportation. Like I have a friend right now, she is doing a concentration in transportation and she found out halfway through the program, she's actually a lot more interested in housing. And so she started taking a lot more elective courses in the housing and real estate track. And so now she does still have like this very kind of expansive understanding of all different aspects of urban planning. And so that will be applied. And then she can just do work experience in housing if she doesn't want to do it in transportation. So I feel like it's definitely, there are just so many opportunities. And again, Christy Kilborn sat down with us and went through a lot of, you know, different kinds of career options. And so mm-hmm. I would definitely refer back to that episode.
Yeah.
So our next question from one of our lovely Instagram followers asked Sam and I if we ride bikes. So Sam, do you ride a bike?
So I have a bike and I have a Metro bike, not membership. It's like a monthly pass.
Yeah.
I will say that where I live, there are not many bike lanes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a little bit daunting to either have to ride on the sidewalk, which is technically not legal. Yeah. And like you could get cited. I don't foresee that being an issue.
Yeah.
But it's possible. Or riding in the street. It scares me.
Yeah.
So I would say I would love to. And I do ride bikes, but not as often as I would like, just because it is scary.
Yeah, it sure is. And I'm the same. So I live in a very suburban area, outside of Los Angeles, and the suburbs make it a little bit more of a challenge to get around on a bike because everything is very dispersed around the city. So I also live in a very hilly area. So it's a little bit more of a challenge for me in my neighborhood. But when I do go to work in downtown Los Angeles, I love riding the Metro bikes to lunch. And so I don't have a pass, but like Metro Bike has an app, that was, I think, recently relaunched. So it's a lot more user-friendly as well. And you can basically just rent the bike, temporarily, and then you just drop it back off to whatever they have different like Metro bike parking stations. And so I'll just do that and I'll just find lunch areas in which there's like Metro bikes around. Mm-hmm. So that's very convenient and I really like doing that. So that is all we got on bikes, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that there are areas of LA where it's like much more like, it's nicer to ride bikes.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Like my friend lives in Santa Monica and doesn't have a car and bikes a lot of places. And they've been mm-hmm. doing a lot of work in Santa Monica to add protected bike lanes.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's progress being made.
For sure.
But probably not in areas that really need it. Like yeah. It's great in Santa Monica, but like, feel like there's a lot of parts of LA that are being ignored that could definitely benefit.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I think that's that on do we ride bikes. The next question, where do we study urban planning? We are both in our last semester at USC, more specifically in the Price School of Public Policy. And in terms of jobs, I feel like it's important to note that when you're doing a degree in urban planning, I don't know if it makes that much of a difference, but there is a difference in if you go to a school of public policy mm-hmm. or a school of design.
Mm-hmm.
There are different, like UC Berkeley, I think their planning program is in their school of design, if I am not mistaken. Either UC Berkeley or UCLA, I forget, one of them. And like Harvard's is in their school of design. But like NYU is in their School of Public Policy. So I think you would probably get a different experience at those.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right. So someone asked, what have been our favorite internship or work experiences, and what projects or tasks did we do?
Girl, why'd you put none?
Because it's like for work experience. Like, if I could say like favorite, I don't necessarily have a favorite with work. I do a lot of like data analyses for project sites. And so that's definitely not something that I would consider like a favorite project that I've ever done. Sure. And that's just because like a lot of the work right now is because we're in preparation for a much larger project. And so all of this is kind of more on the administrative and clerical side of things. So it's a lot of data analysis. So it's just not been like my favorite, you know, project to kind of cite. But fair enough. I would say that the projects that we've been assigned in school and in our program, I have said this, like, I think on almost every single podcast at this point, but I really love working on development proposals and pro formas. And I have had personally a lot of assignments and school projects that work on development proposals. So basically you're provided with a site somewhere located in a city or region, and you have to do a site analysis, and then you have to come up with what you want to put on that site, whether it be housing or a commercial space or, you know, whatever it is, a public park. You can do so many different things. And then you create an entire development proposal and you do a financial analysis for the proposal. And so I really, really love working on projects like that. And so I think that's probably been some of my favorite project experience to date. Yeah.
For sure. So I will take this question in two parts. No, I won't. That doesn't really make sense. My favorite internship / work experience has definitely been my most recent one, working for a private transportation consulting / engineering firm. I've really, really, really enjoyed it so far. I think that the pace of work at this firm, as opposed to when I worked in the public sector, but just better fits my work style and personality. And also when I was in the public sector, I felt a little bit more like limited as to the tasks that I could do because I was in a really specific niche of transit planning. Mm-hmm. Whereas at this other firm, I am just a transportation planning intern. And so that means that I couldn't help with safety projects or active transportation projects or climate focused projects. Like any project really is open. Like if they need help, I can kind of help out where I can.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's been a lot more like diverse work experience. In terms of projects and tasks, I have done, like I mentioned, a lot of different projects at this firm, from like equity analyses for different projects and how the communities that live there might be impacted, and how to like best involve community members and different community-based organizations in the process of planning for projects. I've done a decent amount of visual communication, which I feel like is something that isn't talked about as much in the urban planning space, not in terms of urban design, but in terms of urban planning can be really technical. And it's definitely like an art, not a science, of how to communicate that to the public or people who aren't as familiar with planning.
Yeah.
And so I've learned a lot in like Adobe InDesign and Illustrator in putting together reports that take the analysis that has been done by transportation planners and engineers and really making it clear what's going on and why we're making the decisions that we are. And I feel like that's been a really cool part of my job, where I feel like I can really be creative and try to make these reports like as reader and user friendly and accessible to the public as possible, which has been really cool.
Yeah.
And kind of, I would put it in a bucket of like urban planning adjacent. Like yeah. It really helps when you go in with a knowledge of planning, but I feel like if you are really passionate about graphic design or like just design in general, and you have a curiosity in planning, like it's really important that we are able to communicate what we're doing.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, public outreach is so important. So the work that you're doing is really essential. And I think that's one aspect too, that urban planning can sometimes be, you know, it's very niche. Like you do have to have a pretty good understanding of urban planning in order to kind of enter that space. So when it comes to public outreach, you want to be able to communicate all of the different aspects of urban planning and why certain decisions are being made or why they have to be made. And so that aspect, yeah, is definitely really, really important. And like you said, I've known, I had a friend who got their degree in, I don't think it was graphic design, but it was like something related to design. Mm-hmm. And they're now working for an urban planning firm. And they work on basically like all of the different kinds of outreach, and they do the website design for this urban planning company. And so it's really, really cool. And so I do think, like you said, there are definitely things that are urban planning adjacent that you can get involved in. And you don't even necessarily have to have an urban planning degree.
Yeah.
So the next question we were asked is one that Sam and I were a bit confused on, but we're going to answer it to the best of our ability. So this person reached out and asked, how do you feel about expanding the fast track lanes across the county carpool? So my assumption is that this person is basically saying that instead of having carpool lanes, they would just be replaced with fast track lanes. And for those of you that aren't familiar with fast track lanes, these are basically toll roads. And so you are provided with a transponder, you put that in your vehicle. And when you use the fast track lanes, you are charged a certain amount per mile. And the prices will vary. So during peak traffic time, the price is higher. Depending on how many people you have in the car with you driving, the price may be lower or higher. And so basically, it's just pricing the roads. And if we were to, you know, replace this with fast track lanes, my assumption would be that this is essentially a pilot for congestion pricing. And Sam and I have kind of talked about that, where we would essentially transition to making every single lane on the highway a toll lane. Basically, it would be a VMT tax instead of a gas tax. And so currently, the fast track lane basically allows drivers with an option to, you know, pay a fee and use these specialized lanes for a faster commute. But if we were to replace all of the carpool lanes currently, I do not think politically that would go over well. We have just way too many people at this point who are completely outraged over the concept of transitioning our gas tax to a VMT tax. And Sam and I actually are going to have someone on here to discuss that with you guys in more detail. But I do believe that eventually we're going to need to make a transition, because right now we are not receiving anywhere near the same funding from the gas tax as we're making a transition to electric vehicles. And there are so many things changing right now. So we're actually losing money on the gas tax end. And so there is going to need to be a certain transition. I'm just not 100% sure if politically we could get that through. So I'm not 100% sure if I answered that question great, and I'm sorry, just because I didn't really understand it fully, but I'm hoping you get some answer from that in some way.
Yeah, I don't really know enough about this to comment, although I do think that transitioning from a gas tax to a VMT tax, there's definitely like equity concerns with that. And I think that it would be something that, like you said, kind of like, I think socially, not socially, but in a justice lens, like a lot of people who commute longer, like if you can't afford to live in like the city core and we already have like a not great transit service, like you're going to have to travel further. Like that's just what you're going to do if you live, if you work in the city core. So I feel like, I don't know, there's just like a lot of unknowns in switching something. And so I feel like there's just a lot that I'm like curious about.
Yeah. So one thing that I guess I could kind of say to that point is that, I mean, the same is happening now with the gas tax. If you live farther and you drive longer distances, you use more gas. And so you pay more because you're obviously filling up more often. And then also there have been certain comments that have been cited that I guess, you know, there are also concerns that folks who are lower income may not have high quality vehicles that are more gas efficient. And so also will probably end up spending more money on gasoline. And so that the argument to transition to a VMT tax, I mean, unfortunately, all taxes are regressive. Sales tax is regressive. Gas tax is regressive. Like there are a lot of regressive taxes that we use. I'm not 100% sure if we would be able to find a way to move away from a regressive tax, although I'm sure it's an option and just not one that I've seen yet. But like Sam and I said, we will have someone who's a little bit more well-versed on this topic on to discuss this. So I hope you guys stay tuned for that episode. And to the person that asked this question, I hope you refer to that episode as well, because I feel like that our guests will be able to provide some more information.
Definitely. Our next question, I think it's from someone who said they're from the olden times.
Yeah.
But they asked how so many young people have learned about planning.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great question. And I don't think that either of us really know the whole answer.
Yeah.
I do think that higher education, like you've written here, is a big part of it.
Yeah, for sure.
I would never have known about urban planning if it wasn't for a class that I took in undergrad that was about planning theory.
Yeah.
And that really set me off on like this whole journey as to where, how I got to where I am today. So I think that that is a huge factor in it. And I think it's just really interesting because I do also think that with climate change, there are a lot more discussions about our habits as people and our systems and societies that we've kind of built. And I do think that that is playing a role. And now we're talking about, okay, well, why do we rely on cars? They are emitting greenhouse gases, pollutants, there's health impacts. How do we change these systems? And obviously a lot of the systems that are creating climate change are also linked to the built environment and planning. And so I think that that has been a big catalyst also, especially in, well, we have a housing crisis. So in California, like that's another part of it. But I feel like it's just a lot of these really big things that are happening now that have been kind of shining a spotlight.
Definitely. Yeah. To the point of higher education, I was the same way in undergrad. So my dad is an urban planner. And so that was essentially, I mean, I grew up with one, so I'm not really the greatest person to tell you how, you know, how do young people find out, but I will say that when I was, completing my undergraduate degree, I was actually a policy major, and policy and planning are often very intersectional. And so I would either be reading about planning or we would have a guest come in who was an urban planner. And so I was seeing a lot of people in different spaces in my undergraduate degree. And then my passion regarding the housing crisis and then my understanding of policy, I knew that I personally, I do not enjoy the politics that take place when we are developing policy. And I think that because of my personal dissatisfaction with that whole situation between, you know, just kind of the intersection between politics and policy, I wanted to get more involved in a way to address issues that didn't involve me writing policy or developing policy, because I knew that's not what I wanted to do. And so I understood that urban planning it, yes, does involve policy, but it more specifically involves how we deal with the built environment. And then we are using policy often as, you know, an outline for doing so. And so that was kind of the avenue that I took. And then I also definitely think that right now with social media, mm-hmm. we are seeing just so many different things happening, some good, some not good. But I think with social media, it's definitely, you know, we are starting to see so many different things being discussed and talked about. And, you know, somebody can create a page and just start posting about all of this different information and sharing all of this stuff. And, you know, Sam and I have used Instagram as a way to get more information out about public or about urban planning. So I think that I would say top tier, probably, yeah, higher education, social media, in general, but I'm sure there are other ways. And I think it would be cool. Like maybe we can post on our Instagram and ask like how people mm-hmm. found out about urban planning. Like, I think that yeah. would be interesting. So yeah. All right. So our next question is, what is the best city to become an urban planner?
I don't think there is a best city. I yeah. will say, I think if you're planning on settling down in a particular state or region long term, and that's where you know you want to work, it would definitely be helpful to become familiar with that area. Definitely. So like if you were like, I want to live in California, I don't think you necessarily have to do LA if you want to live in LA, or you have to do like Berkeley if you want to live in the Bay Area or whatever. Like, you can do California more broadly, but I think like taking a city that is within a state or like wider region that you could see yourself living long-term and working long-term is super beneficial.
Yeah. I also will say that, you know, urban planning very generally is essentially anticipating the population growth over a long period of time. There are tons of projections, and then you're essentially planning to accommodate the population that is to mm-hmm. come. And so I think if you're interested in more of a fast-paced job that is going to have a lot of different things going on and a lot of different needs that need to be addressed, I think living and working in a major urban city would be more beneficial to you if that's your preference. Mm-hmm. If you want, you know, something a little bit more low key and something that's maybe not as fast paced, but is still related to planning, maybe a smaller city might work for you. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, it really depends on you as the individual. What is your preference and mm-hmm. what are you really looking for in terms of lifestyle and in terms of, you know, where you want to live? I think that's really important as well. And so I think that would be my best advice if you were looking for the best city. And as Sam said, and I agree, I don't think there's a best city. I think it's what's the best city for you. Yeah. And so you'll have to kind of gauge that in your own time.
Yeah. Every city has their problems.
Absolutely.
So it really just comes down to which problems and in which city.
Yeah.
Do you want to engage?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, super, super, like, for instance, just like really quickly, a great example, Los Angeles homeless crisis. You want to deal with that? Yeah. Los Angeles, that would literally be the best place to go. If, you know, maybe homelessness and housing isn't really a big, you know, interest of yours, there are definitely many other cities that have other issues and challenges and many different things that they need to, you know, address in terms of just changes or, you know, design of the built environment that you can focus in on more in a different space. And so I think, again, it's going to depend on what you're interested in.
Yeah, I agree. LA has like every problem ever though. So you could find your niche in LA, but
exactly.
So if you want to live in LA, okay. This one is an interesting question. How much public outreach education is required in an urban planning degree? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we can only speak to our own experiences in our program.
Correct.
My experience is, although public outreach is talked about in a lot of the classes kind of anecdotally, like there's been lectures about community engagement and there's been lectures about public outreach and that right. more generally, it's not, there's not a required class that is community engagement.
Yeah.
And I do think that looking at what we are required to take and where that could change, I do think that it's a really important part where I think community engagement for a lot of years and still today in some spaces is like a kind of, oh, check the box. Like you have to do it. Like, yeah. oh, I have to have 2 public meetings. So I'm going to do those. And I don't care about attendance and I don't care about that. Like, I just have to have the meetings.
Right.
But I think it should be a lot more meaningful than that, because at the end of the day, planners are like public servants, like mm-hmm. in the sense that like we are supposed to be serving our communities as best as we can.
Yes.
So long story short, in my experience, none specifically, although it is mentioned a lot and like is increasingly becoming more and more of a topic that is being discussed.
Yeah. Yeah. And my concentration also did not require a public outreach course or any public outreach education. But we have a certificate program that you can get in social justice, and that certificate does require that you take a public outreach course. Now, my concentration offered that same public outreach course as an elective, and I chose to take that because I do value, especially going into housing and real estate development, the need for meaningful public participation. And so I wanted to take that course to get more familiar with how to properly engage the public in a meaningful and thoughtful way. And I would say that even if you are not required to do public outreach education as a background, I would highly recommend, if there are courses offered in any of your programs, that you take it. Or if you're not even in a program anymore, like if you've already graduated out of urban planning, there are so many webinars and symposiums and things that are available for, you know, public outreach and public engagement that you could take. So I would definitely just say, I think it's a great skill to acquire and really, really valuable knowledge to have. And so I would say, even if it's not required, still do it. But yeah, Sam and I can only speak to our program. I'm sure there are many programs that maybe do have it as a requirement.
Yeah. And I think in terms of what we did learn, what was the most helpful thing, in my opinion, was partnering with CBOs or community-based organizations, because at the end of the day, if you're a planner, you're not necessarily as in tune with mm-hmm. like the nuances of communities as community-based organizations
exactly.
who they're every day in that community working with those people. They know like they know the ins and outs. And so yeah. I think partnering with those organizations that have the trust of the community and really like listening to them mm-hmm. and about like, okay, this event would be great because a lot of people are going to be here and we can frame it in this way and we can right. have these materials, is has been really helpful, especially in my experience with working and needing to kind of do a lot of engagement on projects that
yeah.
Are like going to impact communities, hopefully for the better, but just wanting to get like ideas of what the community wants. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think when it comes to public engagement and public outreach, partnership and collaboration is so important. And often we get to a very superficial level where it's just kind of information, like we're just sharing information. And so we have to also remember that as planners, obviously we can't live everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so we only have very niche understandings of the spaces that we inhabit and are constantly surrounded by, but we need to focus on the fact that while we may be experts in urban planning and, you know, all of the things surrounding the built environment, we are not experts on community, neighborhoods, people, place, things like that, that we could benefit from the collaboration and partnership with community-based organizations, partnering with community members, things like that. So doing stakeholder analyses and learning about that is really important. And so I would definitely second what Sam said. So jumping into, we're getting close to the end. So someone asked a very specific question about a grad school. So this person asked, UPenn as a grad school option, economic growth and environmental justice. So I'm not familiar with that program at all. I don't know if Sam is, but
no, I am not familiar. Okay.
Yeah. So I think we can make this into a more general piece of advice is that mm-hmm. I would just say if you're, you know, contemplating where you should go to school, regardless of what your major is, just make sure that you're reviewing your school's mission statement and make sure that it aligns with your own personal mission, whether it be for, you know, your mission as a student or your mission as a person who's going to enter a career in the field that you're applying to. And additionally, you can find, you know, my advice to this person would be that you can find current UPenn students in the program on social media. I would refer to LinkedIn. That's what I did for USC. So I just found students who were going to USC and were in the urban planning program. And I basically reached out to them and asked for their input and insight on the program and whether they enjoyed it or not. You could do campus tours. Those are very helpful. But I would just say do a lot of research and make sure that the campus and the environment and the, you know, goals of the program align with your own ideology and your own personal goals, because I think that's going to be really important moving forward.
Yeah. And I think to piggyback on that, looking at the curriculum, what's required, the courses, do they look interesting to you? Do they look like classes that you'd want to take?
Yep.
I definitely would recommend talking to current students.
Yeah.
I did that as well. And it was really helpful to kind of hear not only about the program, but like, where were they living? Like what neighborhoods, what was their commute? Like, did they feel supported in the program? Was it like, did they get help in finding job opportunities? And how was like, was the cohort, you know, driving? Like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of things that you can't get on the website because it's like meant to be very professional and
definitely.
So having more like candid conversations.
Exactly. And that's the thing too, is like not talking to somebody who works for you for the university, but someone who goes to the university, because they're going to give you a lot more transparent answers about what their experience has been like. And you can also, one thing I did as well, I looked at all of the professors, not all of them, but I looked at a majority of the professors that were in the concentration that I was interested in to see who I would be learning from. And I looked at their background. I looked at the research that they were doing, because that also opens up not only opportunities for you if you want to collaborate on research, but also it gives you a sense of who you'll be learning from and this work that they're doing. And so I think that's really important as well, because you want to make sure that who you're learning from is individuals that you align with well.
Yeah. All right. Second to last question. And these, I think, honestly, for the sake of time, we can kind of, well, I guess they're pretty different. So this first one is, how can a person with an urban planning master's get into the profession after 20 years? And I think it's safe to assume that the person received their master's. I don't know if this person received their master's 20 years ago and is now wanting to get into the field, or like was a professional and then just got their urban planning master's.
Yeah.
I think either way, you can definitely find opportunity. I think you could definitely find opportunities that don't require maybe as many years of planning, like planning specific experience.
Yeah.
Or like if you wanted to work for a firm, like, I mean, I know my firm has like business development and admin staff and like operations staff. Like there's a lot of staff that are contributing to the company and contributing to the firm without, you know, being planners, but it's, they're still in the atmosphere of planning and talking to planners and can then kind of learn on the job about the projects that we are doing and that kind of stuff. So I think that there's definitely opportunities where you're not necessarily like a planner, but you're within that sphere.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was helpful.
I think that was. And then also, again, we would just recommend our episode with Christy Kilborn, as well as just looking at her social media. Since she is a career coach, she has a lot of information on the topic. And I think that I actually do remember that she did say, I believe that she's addressed like a very related question about just kind of entering the space regardless of what stage you are in your life. And so I think utilizing her as a resource would be great. And then maybe finding other resources in which, you know, people are entering the profession later on. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can find information. So yeah, I don't have anything else to add because I feel like Sam said that very well. So our final question is, how can one start being involved with urban planning without having prior experience? Now, Sam and I have always said that your lived experience with the built environment is already experience. But of course, I think what this person is maybe asking is like actual experience that you can put on a resume. So if you do want to get more involved, you can just begin looking at opportunities, internships that are related to urban planning. I really have to also say that social media is a really great space that can showcase a lot of different aspects of urban planning. And if you're interested in going to school, then you can begin looking at urban planning programs as well. I think it really just depends on what level of involvement you're talking about. If you want to do advocacy work, there's tons of volunteering opportunities. But if you want to actually get into a career, I mean, you know, I would definitely say pursuing a degree in urban planning is going to be really important. And so I think, again, I would just say it depends on the level of involvement you're actually talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I think for those, the question before this about getting into the profession and this person without prior experience, as someone who has been involved with APA for a while, that is a great place to start. APA.
Do you want to say what APA is?
I'm so glad that you asked. APA is the American Planning Association. Obviously, this is kind of biased for people who live in the States, but I'm sure that every place kind of has their own professional planning organization. Just based on what I know, the APA or APA, American Planning Association, they have statewide branches. They have local branches. I was involved with that Los Angeles branch. Still like I'm in the email list, but they host events, conferences, happy hours, mm-hmm. anything really that you can think of, like you can find with APA mm-hmm. in terms of like planning resources, career help. Most chapters have like professional development chairs. They have equity, like diversity, equity, inclusion chairs. They have like recruitment awards. There are so many opportunities with APA. And like, this is just one example. Like there's also WTS, which is Women in Transportation. So I would say looking into groups like that, because one, with for someone who has a lot of experience, it's great for networking. And yeah. You can meet a ton of people who are already in the field who can point you in directions. You can do a lot of informational interviews with people that you meet at APA. And without prior experience, like it's volunteer, it's very low key. If you want it to be, if you want to be on the board and kind of get to know people that way, that's also an option. But I think it's a great place for anyone who wants to get experience to start.
Yeah, that's an amazing resource.
Yeah. And I do think like for someone without prior experience, if you do want to like volunteer, there's so many organizations that need help. So I do think that that is a great place to start. And at least, and you know what? I think that urban planning, sorry, I'm pivoting. I think that urban planning, it's such a fast moving field that yeah. if you are, you know, wanting to get into the profession or you don't have a lot of experience, read yes. articles, papers, books, anything, because that's where you're going to get like really recent and up-to-date information. And if you want to like really show that you're interested, like you could write a blog, like Natalie's saying, you could do social media to kind of share your thoughts. I think planners really appreciate creativity in Absolutely. The space and like appreciate when people are engaged with the content and the information. And so like, if you don't have any job experience, but you have a blog where you've been talking about things that you've been reading, things that you've been thinking about, experiences you've had with the built environment, like that will show well if you do end up applying to internships or jobs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a really, really great piece of advice. And I would second that for sure. It's just so amazing to me how multifaceted this field is and just how many opportunities there really are. And there are just so many different ways that you can get involved. Like Sam and I have talked about this before, but you know, we're meeting people in our cohort that have such diverse backgrounds that are either completely unrelated to planning and yet are still somehow very related. And so it's just, you know, I really do think that urban planning is a space that you are always welcome to be involved in, regardless of what level it is. And so I think it just, you know, you need to determine how involved you want to be. And then based on that, you can just kind of begin, you know, planning for what your next steps are. And I think Sam provided some amazing resources that you can utilize. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, this has gone on quite long. Yeah. So I think now would be a great time
to say our goodbyes.
And say our goodbyes. We have a lot of exciting guests coming up on the podcast. So definitely keep tuning in every week. Like we have, I think we're going to have 3 guests in a row. So it's going to be a really exciting time.
Yeah. So you guys aren't going to have to hear our little voices for a little while.
Our little voices.
Our teeny tiny voices.
But yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode of Urban Planning is Not Boring. If you did, please remember to send us to your friends and follow us wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, guys, urban planning is not boring.
No, it is not.